First of all, Tim, how you feeling?
I'm feeling better. You know, I kind of broke the fever, so to speak, last night, and so I can actually, you know, talk a little bit and move around a little bit, and so that's good. But I am feeling better. Thank you.
Well, it's nothing serious, right, Tim?
No, it's just okay. a bad case of the flu, and okay. I think it's a cumulative thing. You know, we went through a few weeks there where, you know, we went to China, and as soon as we got back, I got thrust, as well as so many other people, and we're the lucky ones, but into this fire thing, and then we went right into the season and a quick road trip, which actually was not an easy road trip if you think about it, because we had that late start in New Orleans and flew to Memphis, did the game, and flew right to Dallas. I think I was just worn down, to be honest with you.
Well, since you're okay, I can give you grief, and I gotta give you grief. I cannot believe how you hung Guy Haberman out to dry. If you don't know, listeners, Guy Haberman filled in for Tim Roy last night. I looked at that roster of the Toronto Raptors with those names. Yeah. Siakam, they've got Anunoby. Pirtle, even though there's no R in his name, it's pronounced Pirtle. They've got a guy named Caboclo, I believe.
Good game to miss, Tim.
Lucas Noguera. I mean, come on, what are you giving Guy those kind of names for?
You know, if you get the chance to step up, you got to step up. You know, it's not like I'm giving him the Finnish national team
I couldn't understand why he was carrying a German, Italian, and Spanish dictionary with him to the game last night.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Rosetta Stone.
So I appreciate Guy. He was there, be able to fill in at the last second, and that's not easy. You know, you're thrown into something and that you're not ready for mentally and, you know, to check that box. But I'm sure he did fine.
Yeah, he did a real good job. Not too good, though, Jim. Yeah, Tim. I would say. Yeah, you're the man. You're still the man.
Don't call me Wally.
That's what I was going to say. Tim's in our demographic. He knows who Wally Pip is.
So I assume you were watching the game last night. I wonder if you look at it differently, though, when you're just at home watching as opposed to broadcasting it.
Well, to be quite honest with you, I didn't watch it last night. I think I've taped it, but I didn't watch it because it was just one of those things. I had the chills and the fever, and so it was, you know, pull the covers up and hang on for, you know, for the ride. But I didn't really get a chance to watch it. I know that there's I read this morning online there was a great flurry there at the end, which. Mm-hmm. Helped him get a win, which is good. And, you know, I think last night's kind of an indication of where the Warriors are and where the league is with the Warriors. I think, you know, you're going to see everybody and their friend come after the Warriors this year, and as they have in the last couple, but I think even more so this year. And so, you know, I just think it's going to be, you know, a hard regular season. I don't think it's going to be the one where they're going to blow everybody out and just, you know, cruise. I think there's going to be a lot of tough games this year.
So to hell with my question about watching the game differently.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. You did the much more important thing last night for sure. I guess my question would be, is it better news that they were able to call upon a couple of stops at the end and get that 10-0 run to close it out? Is that better news that they came up with at both ends of the floor, the right plays in the clutch, or more troubling that they had these lapses?
Well, let me get back to your first question first, and then go back to the one I should have answered it this way. Watching a game where you're supposed to be working it is really, it's hard.
Yes.
Yeah. It's torture. Yeah. and it's like there'll be some nights on the NBA trail. It's rare, but every now and then you'll have a team with a home back-to-back and the Warriors get into town early. And, you know, it's different if it's not the sport you're working in. But I'm thinking, do I really want to go see Miami play at Denver when we have a night off? Because it's like, yeah, I could do it for research and everything else, but I can do that in different ways. And it's just really hard to go to a game in the league you're working in and not have something to do. you know, it's different. I think it's different when you go to say if you're a basketball guy, you go to a baseball game. That's different. You're out there. It's in the summertime. It's in your off time, and it's different going to a football game or a hockey game. But if it's inside the league you're working in, to me, it's really odd to go to a game like an NBA game. It'd be really odd for me to go to a game and not be working. So that's the answer to your first question. But the second one, I think it's just where they are right now. I don't think they're, well-honed, machine to their ability. I think what they are is that they're a really, really good team. It's coming off an exhausting three-year run, and I think that this season is going to be one where they're hopefully playing better basketball in March than they are right now, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Tim, the Warriors, I don't want to, here's a spoiler alert, they went on a 10-0 run in the last 90 seconds to win the game.
Right.
And as I was watching the game, and as I've watched Warrior games over the last couple years, I never, ever, ever give up on them in the fourth quarter of a game, no matter how late it gets. And the reason is because I'm starting to think they're the most explosive team in NBA history. And follow me here. They're a great defensive team, and they're a great offensive team, and they're an offensive team playing in the three-point era. So a lot of teams, when they go on a quote-unquote run, you know, they may hit a three, get a stop, get a bucket, then the other team will score, then they'll get a bucket. Oh, it's a good 7-2 run. But the Warriors have a way of getting three, stop, two, stop, three, and it's 11-0. I never think they're out of a game, and I've never seen any team that I can remember like that.
You know, I think you're right. I think especially because you add the three-point shot to that mix. That they're an amazing team that way, and they slice up what usually in the old days you would say, oh well, man, you're down 10 with a couple minutes to go, you're in trouble, and you are, you shouldn't be there. But with this team, I know they could make up 8 or 9 points of that in 40 seconds, mm-hmm. if they get a steal. We saw that really. I thought coming into the finals, I was wondering, where could they be able to make that kind of a run? And they did in game three in Cleveland, which basically won the series for them. But that run that ends up with Kevin Durant hitting the three. But yeah, they're a team, I think, that's never out of a game because of the firepower and the fact that they play defense. Now, their defense so far this year has not been very good. But I think that the fact that they're able to take a miscue by the other team, and turn it into a devastating 90 seconds, that to me is their backbreaker. That's when they break the will of the other team. It's when the other team is in control of the game, and they feel really good about it, and then all of a sudden, miss shot, kick out, that gets a transition three, steal, transition three, and then all of a sudden the other team's coach is calling a timeout, and his 10-point lead's down to one, and they're looking around going, what just happened here?
Yeah, that's part of what makes them so lethal, and they know it too. And that's that little knowledge, sometimes I've mentioned it over the week, it can be a little dangerous. It's like you don't panic, and that's a good thing when you fall down. There are other times where they're just not firing out of the gate, and it's no big deal. They know they can come back, but you just don't want that to lend to complacency.
Absolutely. You don't want them to rely on flipping the switch.
Yeah.
Because that option's not always there. And especially against really good teams, it's not there. And so, I think there is there's definitely I think something to work on right now, and that is to get the focus a little bit better, get their conditioning a little bit better, and everything involved with all that. And I think that they have to get to a point now where they can make some of the games they play in an easy game, like they did in Dallas. And if they can get to the point where they can kind of get that killer instinct back early on in the game and try to make the game fun. You know, I mean, we've been spoiled so much. If you think about this, we're spoiled so much watching this. I mean, what's Stephen Curry's fourth quarter, you know, DNP up to probably about 50, right. Maybe a whole season. Right. Who knows? Yeah. It's got to be close to that over the last 3 years. And so, you know, if they can get to the point where they can start giving those guys, you know, quarters or half a quarter off, and that pays dividends later on down the road when you got guys are a little bit fresher.
Tim, I'm sure you've gotten asked this question a lot. I know I do, and it's, well, what could hurt the Warriors season, or what are you concerned with? And obviously injuries is number one, but I think I found something.
Uh-oh.
Just a little something, and here it is. You look at a game like last night. Steve Kerr talked about how he doesn't know if Young's the backup two or if McCaw's the backup two, and he said it's going to be really hard to play them minutes unless the game's a blowout. And JaVale McGee was a healthy scratch last night. I'm just wondering if you have to kind of go back and forth between Nick Young and between McCaw, and you have to maybe go back and forth between Caspi and maybe a David West, could it be possible that there could be some rust there? If you're asking Nick Young, for example, on Friday, maybe he's going to play 25 minutes after he played no minutes. I mean, can you see, forget about a concern, but could you see that happening?
You could. I think it's really too early to tell. You know, we're not even one-eighth of the way through the season, so I don't think he's really set on rotations, and I think Steve likes to play the rotations, you know, to the point where, you know, each night the 8, 9, and 10 guys are a little bit different, and I think it's by design to try to keep everybody engaged. And so I think for some players, maybe the guy like Nick Young, I mean, he's played on teams that haven't been great. So he's always been part of the mix because he can score. And right. So that may take some getting used to for him. I mean, JaVale McGee's in his second year with the Warriors, second year working with Coach Kerr. So I think that he's probably, you know, got a better handle on it than maybe, say, a guy like Nick Young who's just getting in here. And, you know, it could be a problem. There's always, you know, problems with rotations and things. But I think over time this will all work itself out.
Tim Roy, voice of the Warriors, joining us for a few more moments on 95.7 The Game. Kerr is still working on his rotation, still looking on something to settle with. But one of the interesting developments earlier in the year is Jordan Bell getting a lot of playing time and being paired with Draymond Green. And then you had Bell, Green, I think Andre, it might have been Clay and Steph. You had a tremendous defensive unit there on the floor. And then Steph could kind of roam free a little bit more. But Bell and Green together is intriguing to me.
It is intriguing. And I think, you know, I think for Jordan Bell, and we talked about this in our weekly show the other night, that he's kind of in the classroom for Professor Green on the defensive side. And I think that easy now. Come on now.
Well, actually, I would take a class taught by Draymond Green, come to think of it.
Yes. You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, both guys, there are another two guys who can switch. You know, I think that the one area we've seen where, you know, Jordan will have to get better at probably is defending guys in the perimeter. Well, you know, he's a rookie. You know, every rookie's got to learn something for the most part. And so so I think that this is a great, you know, class for Jordan to take and to watch how Draymond approaches the game, watch how he thinks the game through. And that's something that a lot of people don't talk about with Draymond because they see the fire. They don't see the intelligence. They don't see the theories and the study that goes behind what he does. I mean, he knows personnel and he understands, you know, what certain guys can do to hurt them. And so I think for Jordan, this is going to be really good. It's going to be a really good thing for him. And I'm like you, Ray. I'm intrigued anytime you get two guys like that who are really active on the defensive end. And again, the combinations for Steve Kerr are endless with this roster.
Ray and I have a disagreement here. He asked me to ask you one more question, and I'm thinking maybe this guy should get back to bed.
Really?
Can you handle one more question?
I can handle one more. Yeah.
All right, here's the question. We're coming up on the holiday season. Are you planning to make your peanut butter and chocolate cookies / treats this year and give them away at the game?
The peanut butter balls. Yes, yes. I will be making those. Yes.
Those are absolutely obscene.
They are.
They're just
They're evil.
Oh, you've had them?
I've had them.
That's because Tim's very generous with them.
Yes. Yeah,
well, get well soon so you can make those, Tim.
Okay, I promise I'll get back in the saddle. Okay.
It's all about us. All right. All right, thank you, Tim. Tim Roy joining us this morning.